Roll call and minutes approval.
Yeah, that's up to Kyle. Since
Steve's not here, Kyle. Yeah. Okay. And then I'm assuming that, Kyle, you are taking chair duties this evening.
Okay. News to me, but I can do it.
Yeah, that might be another.
Like I didn't see Steven, so it looked like I was like, okay, he must not be coming. So
that might be maybe another informal announcement. Kim, are you okay if I just cover that real quick before we get started officially? Okay. So Steven Willis informed us that he is going to need to step down from his chair position for personal reasons. And we still need to clarify whether that means just the chair position or if it means his position entirely on the SWAC. So we were trying to figure out, we weren't certain if Steven was going to be joining us tonight. And I think, Kyle, you're correct. I don't think he's going to be joining us. We hadn't heard back. So, Kyle, assuming you're okay, that would fall to you to take chair duties. And then once we get a little bit more information, I know the recruitment committee has been meeting and talking, so there may be another position that we need to add to that recruitment process once we get a chance to follow up with understand what his limitations or what his expectations are about stepping down, whether it's just this chair or on the committee commission altogether. So that being said, we will update everybody once we get more information. But with that, I will turn it back over to Kyle as today's chair of the SWAC meeting.
Okay, so let's formally get our meeting started. I'm just going to do a quick roll call. So we all know that Steven is absent. Kyle's obviously here. I saw Alan was here. It looked like I saw Simone somewhere over there is here. Rich is here. Tim, you're here. Jason, is Jason here now?
He popped in and
I don't see Jason currently, so hopefully he can get in at some point. And then Derek is here and Joe is here as well. And then it looks like we have a couple staff, Jacob, as we were introduced to earlier, and Mike, it looks like, is here, Julie, and I don't know who's Jay Hoffman. I don't know. Sorry.
So that email I sent out about the Debbie.
Okay. Yeah. Perfect. So he is from the state. Is that correct?
Yeah, this is Joe Hoffman. The Department of Agriculture's pesticide disposal program and can talk about that and container recycling.
Okay, perfect. Thanks for joining us.
Oh, you're welcome.
Okay, so let's just go through the approval of the minutes from last quarter's meeting. Did everyone have a chance to review the agenda and want to make a motion to approve?
I'll move to approve the minutes from the May meeting.
Okay, thanks, Rich.
Second.
Okay, anyone have any discussion points on anything they want to discuss from it? All right, moving forward. Perfect. Next up on the agenda, we have the updates from Clark County Public Health Solid Waste Program.
Thank you, Kyle. This will be brief, but just to update you on a few big things that are going on. But as you should have seen, if you haven't had a chance, you will get a chance to look in your email. We've continued the new tradition of including just general solid waste and environmental outreach updates in an email so that you can review them and follow up with any questions that you have. So you should have an email that's outlining the basics, not the basics, but just a general overview of any new things that have happened since last time we met, including, you know, just in general, we're continuing to provide services virtually to a lot of customers and a lot of students and a lot of our customer base. We're reaching virtually, so switching a lot to Zoom meetings for trainings and just finding new ways to engage with our public. I think probably one of the biggest hiccups or the biggest roadblocks that we're looking at right now is exactly what schools will look like for our Green Schools program come September. As a broad brush description. A lot of schools are implementing things that in one way or another undo a lot of the work that the schools programs have done. Waste Connections, the City of Vancouver, and Clark County staff around food waste diversion, milk dispensers. So a lot of those things may be bypassed when students return to school. So I think we're kind of in a sit and wait mode for what exactly schools will look like. However, we are still moving forward with researching what education might look like virtually in schools and how we can incorporate ourselves into the curriculum and work with teachers to create something that's appealing. On other fronts, we have a small group of people on our program that are working on what we're just loosely calling right now the a strategic plan for equity and environmental justice. The original thought is that we will bring it to SWAC and our stakeholders as a proposed supplemental chapter to our solid waste management plan. The benefit of that being is it would give us a chance to incorporate concepts and ideas around how we can improve our system around racial equity, gender equity, and some other big areas that this group identifies as some areas that we need to improve our program with. So the other benefit would be it would give all of us that are new to the SWAC since the last solid waste management plan update an opportunity to practice collaborative generation of content for the solid waste management plan. So right now we have four people that are outlining a plan, including stakeholder involvement. SWAC involvement obviously is one of those stakeholders, other cities, other partners, on a series of problem statements and actions that we can take related to equity and environmental justice. So that's very much early on, and it's in its infancy. We've had a lot of conversations as a team about what the current conversations happening around the country and around the world mean to our program, and where we can work with our partners to make differences and improve our program's access and impact on various populations. So that is very much in its infancy. We are working on a plan, and we will probably be bringing that to SWAC for SWAC involvement at the next meeting, as well as enough time for all of you to prepare to participate in that project. So I think those are the two really big updates. I already shared that Amber is at home with a brand new little girl. And we also have one other, our Tina Campbell, our Green Neighbors coordinator, program lead, is also due any minute now. Any moment now? Minute? I don't know. So, but we will also have another little expenditure in our solid waste family as well. So otherwise, no big updates related to COVID or budgetary items as far as COVID impact. You know, the main COVID impact right now is schools and our ability to provide services. I'll probably let Derek, if that's okay, Derek, I'll let you touch on some of the challenges we've had at Central and some of the transfer stations and some of the really great responsive ways you've stepped up to kind of address those sort of things. Derek, can you shake your head yes or no if you're cool covering that during the Waste Connections update? Okay. Thank you. But really our goal is just to make sure that we are prepared for whatever schools and what schools look like when they reopen, and just continuing to evaluate how we're talking to our public given everything that's going on. So, but I do encourage you to read the update that was sent out. All the other updates will be covered later on today during the agenda. So. Any questions or comments or thoughts related to any of those updates? Kim.
I just wanted to also add in an update that Jessica sent me, just saying that the timeline's been a little stalled, but she's been developing the report for that special waste project that we've mentioned a few times. So she's already drafted the antifreeze and oil, as well as the batteries one. So, you know, eventually we'll get around to bringing more of that. Right now they're all in like sort of internal stakeholder reviews, as well as with our solid waste partners with the city. That's all I had, though. And then, yeah.
Great. Kyle, I'll turn it back over to you.
Okay. Any other questions? Doesn't look like it. So now we are going to move on to solid waste enforcement from Clark County Public Health.
Everyone, good evening. Melissa couldn't join us tonight, but I'm going to give a quick update on the quarter two report that came out. It was attached to the meeting. If you haven't had a chance to see it, the good news on there that we're happy to report is she was able to pick up her work after about a month and a half not doing field inspections due to COVID, and she caught back up quickly. The main difference with these inspections is they could not be random, so they were scheduled with all of our facilities just to accommodate everything that had to be accommodated. So those went great. We met our quota for that. The next update is you guys have been asking questions about Whatley Pit. As far as I know, they're still working with DNR and Ecology. They're still on the voluntary cleanup program. The Director of Public Works scheduled a meeting on August 12th with DNR, Ecology. Public Health was invited to that meeting, and in the agenda and the synopsis that he provided, they are still contesting the sample results, arguing that they're not, they weren't done appropriately. I met with our health officer to discuss our role. I'm not sure why Public Health was invited. We're very much on the outskirts of this conversation, but if it comes to us, we will not be supporting that argument. We'll be on the side of Ecology and agreeing with their sampling schedule. So I think at the next meeting, I'll be able to give you an update what comes out of the meeting. So it's still kind of a question of why the meeting was scheduled and stuff. But the next big update is I've been talking about a solid waste enforcement code update, and I will be giving it to Travis's team for our first final internal review. It's been a slow process getting that going. I got to build all the surveys. We're using Survey 123. Our GIS department was helping us build those, and so that will go up to Travis's team tomorrow. Travis, do you have a question? I know I said I'd get the team 2 weeks ago.
No. We don't need to talk about that right now. I was just very curious if you could just give everybody a reminder. I know we've had some people rotating in and out. Could you just quickly give everybody a reminder on what the Solid Waste Enforcement Code does and what the update is intended to accomplish, just real quickly?
Sure. It has been about 30 years from what we can see since the Solid Waste Code has been gone through a full review. There's been little additions here and there. A lot of the language is very antiquated, so it had to be updated. Roles and responsibilities didn't match up between what council, Board of Health, and health officer did. We're taking this opportunity to add some education to the public. What a garbage container should look like, where there's areas of no garbage service, how they should be storing, transporting, taking care of their garbage. We're adding sections for hazardous waste, biomedical waste, animal waste, things that we simplified a lot of the language so that an everyday citizen could pick it up and read it and understand what they're reading. And so we're hoping this will also be used as education. So the enforcement from our side is still very limited in what we can do. So, it'll go through the review, but we are eager to get your thoughts on it. You can mark your calendars. August 31st, that week, will be when I'll be sending it out to you guys. And it'll be in the form of a survey. You'll be able to click, do you agree, do you not agree, if you don't agree, why, and provide comments that way. And that'll allow us to quantify everything and get an idea of who agrees. I have a two-year-old trying to break in. Sorry. And that's it. Do you guys have any questions for me?
So that survey you mentioned, is that going to be for internal stakeholders like SWAC, or is that for general public as well, if we could be assisting in outreach with that?
It'll be separate. So my vision is Travis's team, his solid waste folks, will do a review, make sure that I didn't miss anything, spelling, grammar, and then you guys will get it. You'll be your own special section before it goes to the public. public, I don't imagine will be, I think October, November will be when it goes out to them.
Will that, will you have like a track changes version where we can see what's actually different from the old one, or how is that going to look for us?
Yeah, the way I've written it, I've kept it in the form that council wants to see it. And so you'll see all the, everything I'm proposing to delete will be struck through. Everything new will be underlined. So you'll get two things in an email. You'll get a link to the survey, but also the full document with all the changes.
And the schedule for implementation, I mean, you're talking 6 more months or so, or 3 months?
Yeah, we'll do our internal review for 3 weeks. You'll get it, I imagine, for 2 or 3 weeks. There's about a week or two after that for us to actually implement all the changes and recommendations, and it'll go to the public for another 3 weeks. One of the questions we have to ask ourselves is, because we can't have in-person work sessions right now, is depending on the number we get back, I need to justify to council that we have a representative response of the public and that there's support in this. If I don't get that, I think it's back to the drawing board, and we have to reimagine how we get this out. So I'm hopeful. We have some stakeholder groups that I'm sending it to that they can then send it out. One of the questions I have on the survey for the public is I want people to enter their area, their zip code, so that we have an idea of where people are providing comment, and that'll let us, I can aggregate that out and see, you know, if people are disagreeing, is it from one zip code? Maybe that'll give us an idea of how we can make adjustments. And, yeah.
Do you ask for any other demographic information, like to make sure that, you know, it's not just folks that are available to fill out the survey, but, you know, you're getting a good spectrum of age and income level and race and...
That's a good question. I met with our epidemiologist, and that was one of the suggestions they have. I'm still building the public part, the public component. I'm not going to ask you guys what your socioeconomic status is, but I think that's certainly something that I should build into the public piece. And that is one of the suggestions or things I'm looking for, Kim, from your group. If you guys have ideas like that, I'm open to that.
And there's some pretty antiquated language in there, right? I mean, not to ask you to list pretty specific information, like specific examples, but there's 30 years, there's quite the antiquated language in there, right? This is a pretty heavy lift.
Yeah. I mean, we took out language that talked about what a servant is and a landowner. I thought that didn't need to stay in the...
Oh, yeah.
When I say antiquated, I mean it's antiquated. It doesn't serve a purpose at this point.
Okay.
Can you say servant?
Yeah.
Can you send that to me? Or I guess I'll see it.
You can look it up on the Clark County Code 24.12.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah.
And we'll be available, myself and Brian. I'm assuming we can make ourselves available once the survey goes out. We can be available for questions, help, guidance, whatever people are looking for when those go out.
And I should have mentioned, one of the things I'm hoping to get from SWAC is the survey will go out. I'll get your responses. I would love to have a work session, either a couple small work sessions to work through this if you guys have questions. But I want this to be battened up pretty tight so that we all are in agreement and support the changes that are in there. Okay. Thank you.
Thanks, Brian. Yeah, that's something I guess we should all be looking out for, is that survey result and then a possible work session on the schedule with Brian and his staff about the code update. And hopefully we can give him some good input. Next up on the agenda, we have City of Vancouver. And it looks like I saw Julie somewhere in there.
There. So
I'll turn it over to her.
Can you all hear me very well? Not? Okay.
Yep.
Great. My 3-year-old's in the background, so I know what you mean, Brian. So just quick updates from City of Vancouver. At our last meeting, I mentioned to you that we were working on yard debris contracts that went before council in late May. Those 4 contracts with 4 different vendors in the region have been approved for the next 3 years or so. And as a reminder, we use those yard debris contracts to set rates and have existing programs and set determined sites that we can utilize for our yard debris disposal coupon with the city's spring coupon program. the fall leaves coupon program, as well as city operations. So that one's checked off. And then with regards to our spring coupon, we did extend it for an additional month due to COVID and stay-at-home orders in April and May. So early results from the spring coupon program are good numbers in terms of tons diverted of yard debris, about 830 tons. Disposal costs represent about $67,000. About 1,000 tires disposed of. That's roughly $3,400 in disposal costs there. So we still have about another month's worth of data from that program to come in, and we expect it to be a little bit higher due to the increased yard debris disposal costs and then increased rates that went into effect in May, but also due to an additional month of offering that program and the COVID response that impacted it. And then we are preparing for the regional fall leaves coupon, and that is set to go out October through December. So same program, same vendors. We're happy that COVID really won't impact the service at this time, but we envision it to be similar in the process of how we deliver it to customers. And then at the direction of our city EOC team, Solid Waste is continuing to provide limited garbage service and garbage bag assistance for at-risk and unhoused community members through our Safe Park Zone that's located at C-Tran and Evergreen Transit Center off 18th and about 136th. And then two sanitation sites. That is, again, the direction of our EOC team, and in light of COVID and the impacts it has created due to our most at-risk and vulnerable populations. And then COVID, as I mentioned in the last Slack update, it has traditionally, we have neighborhood cleanup events that we offer to about 50 neighborhood associations throughout the year. And it has really thrown a wrench in our plans for community events. So I just have to extend a shout out and a word of gratitude to Waste Connections, Derek's teams and operations, the customer service managers and leads. They worked tirelessly with us to really roll out a one-time temporary curbside bulky item collection service. And I'll try and share in the comment section the web address that we have where we kind of describe this service. But it is a one-time service, and it's really intended to be an alternative to serve our 45,000 plus households and our multifamily residents that really relied on the once-a-year disposal option that they were getting through their neighborhood cleanup events. And we are, as I mentioned, we're rolling it out just now. Late July is when we started. We anticipate picking up speed and serving the broader swath of the Vancouver community as we go in the months and weeks ahead. But I guess I can't extend a greater expression of gratitude to the Waste Connections team for really helping us partner, because the neighborhood cleanup program is a partnered activity between city neighborhoods, city staff, and Waste Connections and the drivers. And we're really hopeful that this one-time alternative service can be done at 2020. We can roll into 2021 with our neighborhood cleanups again. And I think that's it for us, unless you have other updates or questions for Vancouver.
Okay. One question for you, circling back to the yard debris contract. You mentioned the rates in there. What are the rates? Are those future rates already decided in the contract, or in terms of price increases, or are those determined in the future?
So the rates are set for the contract term, and the contract term is 1 year at a time for up to 3 or 5 years is the option. And we have four different vendors, and each vendor, when we submitted an RFP, each vendor responds with their proposed rate. And then we build a rate structure around that. We did have a committee review the rates and assure that they were within a acceptable range, because vendors do have different rates that they would charge. And if you'd like, I can provide you with a summary of the different rates per vendor. Most of the vendors charge per yard. CRC Westvan is the one vendor that charges per ton because of the scales there. So
that's more for, this is more for the self-haul yard debris. Is that what we're focusing on, not the curbside pickup?
Not self-haul. Yeah, this is as it relates to programs that the city administers.
Parks department, things like that.
City staff operations, when they have yard debris to dispose of. Primarily, it is from Solid Waste. We'll use these contracts for, say, their fall leaves disposal. We contract with the vendors. We send the public there and have the disposal, basically the vendor email or sends us an invoice with the coupon, and we pay based on yards or tons for the equivalent cost of that customer going there. And the fall leaves program, just briefly, I can provide an update next quarter when it's appropriate. But that's a regional program that Vancouver manages in partnership with Clark County Public Works. And it's serving to prevent localized flooding and get leaves composted at the site.
All right. Thanks for the clarification. I appreciate
it. Clear as mud.
Yep.
Okay. Good. Thank you. Have a good SWAC meeting.
Okay, next up on our agenda, we have the Waste Connections update with Derek.
Good evening. So I'm sitting outside because it's the one quiet place in my house, and my neighbor's doing construction next door, so hopefully it's not too noisy. A couple updates. So as Travis alluded to, we're working through all the COVID madness. Workforce-wise, we haven't had any interruptions of service because our staff has really handled it well, and we haven't had any outbreaks. We've had one of our employees about a month ago come down with COVID. We were able to isolate it and not have any issues or spread on that, and then we had two sort line employees that don't work for us that are contract laborers contract the virus. But again, isolated incidents and both handled really well so that we didn't have any kind of spread or any kind of disruption of service, which was nice. We have, obviously, all of our drivers and our employees are wearing masks out in the field. Our general instruction to them is if you can't be 6 feet away from somebody, so two drivers in a cab, you have to have a mask on. If you're out on route by yourself, you don't have to wear a mask, assuming you're not by a customer or something else. Our customer service staff is still not back in the office, and they will not be back in the office at least through the month of August. We don't know how much longer after that. We'll see how things go. We're playing it pretty safe right now. And the impact has been probably a little bit longer hold times because people are a little bit more comfortable at home right now and maybe not taking 60 or 70 calls that they would take in the office. Maybe they take 40 calls because they're taking a few more ice cream breaks or things. So we're kind of working through that, but in general, I think the impacts have been pretty good. The transfer stations have been a different story. You know, it can be a volatile situation there a lot. People, when they come to the dump, can get very cranky for some reason. And then throwing in the whole asking to wear masks has been a challenge for us. We don't want to put our scale house employees in a dangerous situation or really some of these volatile situations. So, we have a lot of signage up that says wear a mask. We had, just today I was down at West Van and we had a third party driver coming in and he refused to wear a mask. So we have to send a manager out a lot of times to talk to him, kind of de-escalate the situation. If a customer says, hey, I've got usually they have some sort of respiratory issue that prevents them from being able to wear a mask. So we usually put them in the corner for a little bit and say, hey, that's fine. Why don't you wait while we clear the tip floor? We make them wait for about 15 to 20 minutes, and most of the time in that 15 to 20 minutes, their respiratory issue goes away. They put their mask on, and they go tip on the tip floor. But there are some that really have issues, and so we work with them. We just ask them to wait until we can create the space, and that approach seems to have worked pretty well. We still get some difficult situations, but in general, we're in pretty good shape. Couple other things of note. Recycle markets continue to be pretty good. Fiber is moving, like cardboard and paper is moving really well. Waste Connections signed a national agreement with Georgia Pacific in the last couple of weeks, and basically it ensures that Georgia Pacific will manage all of our recyclables. So whatever we produce at the sort line, they have to buy from us. So the good thing about it is Georgia Pacific is, you know, we're guaranteed to basically be able to move our material even during difficult times. They have to get it out the door. You do lose some of the ability to direct where some of the material goes at times, so that's probably kind of the trade-off there. But in general, it's a good thing for us. We have some hard-to-move materials like milk cartons and film plastics and some of those other kind of smaller generated quantities, and they're I'm going to have to find a home for them. And they have a really good network of people that they can work with, which is nice. So I think that's going to help us move some of that hard-to-find home stuff, which is good. I think we talked about schools quite a bit. That's certainly a challenge for our education team right now. they're getting creative on different projects that they're working on. So they're doing a lot of video production, you know, different things that they can get out there to try and do the education for the community. Our cart taggers continue to do a good job out in the field. They've been back out in the field for about a month now. We are seeing kind of a similar thing. You know, 4th of July is a big issue for us. So everybody likes to put their fireworks in the recycle bin because they're made out of paper. So we have a lot of those kind of tagging issues going on. We did have one pretty significant fire that I can – I think Kim might have the video. She could always share it with you guys. It was the week after 4th of July. One of our loader operators at Central was moving the pile around and ignited somehow a pile of unspent fireworks. So it was kind of like a much smaller version of Beirut. The pile just kind of exploded on them. So luckily nobody was injured, nothing major, but it was kind of a startling moment. And we always have something going on with 4th of July, so.
Did you just compare it to Beirut?
I would never do that. That's inappropriate, Travis.
And if people want to come after the meeting, I can play the video and share the screen.
The bulky item we talked about with the neighborhood cleanup's gone well. You know, I think Julie probably mentioned it, but we would see 50 to 100 people depending on the neighborhood cleanup we went to attend those events. We had a lot of concern about everybody viewing this as an opportunity to put all their garbage at the curb, and really it's gone really smoothly. We're doing about 30 pickups or so a week, 30 to 40 pickups, and it's worked really well. We have a nice tool that we've developed for online service, which we'll be able to roll out throughout the county and use going forward, which is nice, which will allow customers to do more online ordering of services, which is really helpful, I think, to everybody. Last two things, we're participating in a state of Washington waste study or waste audit. I'm not exactly sure what they're doing, but it's part of the Department of Ecology's study. So they will be coming down towards the end of August to West Van, and they're going to analyze the waste flow of what's coming in on like a self-haul load, what's coming in on a route, and then I think maybe what's coming in on some construction material as well. So they'll be spending some time analyzing. They'll come in, Kim, isn't that like over the next year? They're going to come in once a quarter for the next year, I think?
Something like that, yeah. So this is their waste stream analysis. So they did one a couple of years ago throughout the state. However, they didn't do a Southwest Washington location as part of that waste stream analysis. So this time they wanted to make sure to get one in Clark County. So it's really fantastic because we'll have some really good data about our waste stream once they're done.
And the last thing I had was we're also participating in Metro in Portland is doing a broad analysis of the material recovery facilities, the MRFs in the area. They asked if they could interview our staff at the site. They're kind of just looking at the holistic system, and one of the pieces of it is, I guess it's kind of like, what's it like being a recycling sorter? So they're going to come down and do some interviews. Of the folks that speak either English or Spanish. We have a large portion of our workforce that is Pacific Islander, so it's going to be a little bit of a challenge for them to figure out how to communicate, but it should be interesting to see what comes out of it. And I don't know the timeline on that, but when we have that available, we can share that with Slack as well. It might be too interesting. So, and I think that's all I got.
I have a question.
Yeah.
So we've talked about the traffic situation at West Van previously, and I thought I heard about an accident this week at the entrance. Is that correct?
Yeah, it's up at Central, up on 117th up there and Highway 503, whichever one you call it. We had, we're unfortunately, one of the things I have actually written on here, I wasn't going to get into the details, but certainly as traffic has increased and people are getting back out in the world, we are seeing some really crazy driving events going on right now. And we have had, I think we were run into 3 or 4 times in June and then another 2 times in July on our route trucks. And it's just people not paying attention or rushing, just getting back out there in the world. So things are getting kind of nutty. So Yesterday at Central, we had a car with a just one of those little tipper trailers on it coming south on 503, making a right turn into Central. There was no traffic backup or anything like that, so it really was just a normal slow down and turn right. I don't know if the car had blinkers on or didn't have blinkers, or the trailer didn't have blinkers, but the car directly behind it did not stop and ran into it and spun it around. So they were kind of at ends right out in front. It actually blocked access to the site for about an hour and a half. Police, fire, ambulance all came. We didn't get too many details about what happened, and we try not to get involved in those things when they're out front. So, I think somebody might have been taken away by ambulance, or might have just been assessed by the ambulance. But certainly we're seeing those things once a quarter or so. We see a serious accident out in front of there, and that's one of the things that, we've talked a lot about trying to improve the entrance way there. I don't know if Mike's going to talk about that tonight or not, but we went out to bid 2 weeks ago on some entrance improvements that we're going to make later this spring or later this fall, assuming we can get everything worked out with Washington Department of Transportation, which should help alleviate some of that. Usually we have problems with people turning left in or left out of the facility and crossing that southbound lane and not seeing traffic and colliding. Those are real dangerous. This was a different kind of event, but it continues to be a serious safety concern for us.
Thank you.
Yep.
Just real quick, as a follow-up, Simone, and to the group, is that Mike's going to talk a little bit about the regional system study today, but really going to focus in on a specific aspect of the regional system study that we need some SWAC members to step up and help out with. But one of the main priorities, and like Derek said, one of the things that is in progress, and we've talked a little bit about at previous SWAC meetings, is trying to improve that and get more cars off the road and onto the transfer station. So probably won't go over it today, but one of the parts of this regional system study is a redesign of Central to see what's possible to reduce the traffic impacts on 503 and reduce those accidents. So, but probably won't go into detail on that today, but that's a big piece of it. So,
hey, I have a quick question for you, Derek. The waste stream analysis, is that just informational, or are there metrics that you're being compared to, or that's just, for your own information?
So it's Department of Ecology that's doing it, and I think it's just probably informational or helps them kind of generate guidelines and initiatives, going forward. What we will do with it, I couldn't tell you at this point. I don't think I've seen one from the state level before. And like Kim said, I don't think we've done it in Southwest Washington. So it'll be interesting to glean that information and get that from them. Cause then we can go back and, make some decisions on, how we direct our time, maybe more reclamation of construction and demolition materials or, whatever it may be. We can kind of dig into that and see what the information. I forgot to mention, we are also doing our annual allocation study right now of the recyclables, so all the single-family material that's generated in the county. We spend about a month putting a certain portion out off to the side. We run it separate and then go through and weigh it and figure out what's in the cart. And then Kim comes down in her gloves and her hazmat suit and picks through all the residual and figures out all the stuff that our system didn't catch. We put together some nice numbers on it, and we can share that with you guys as well, so you can see kind of what's in the cart. And it's evolved over the years, obviously, as newspaper has gone away, as packaging has changed. And so it's interesting to see how things kind of continue to evolve.
Yeah, and if I could add to that, so I had started to put together a safety plan for how we could do what we call the residue study. It's an add-on to the allocation study. That wasn't able to happen this year. So what we've been doing is going out on those days and still looking at the residue or the contamination and at least getting some anecdotal data, like observations, just to make sure that we're not surprised by anything, new. And
So yeah, it's, unfortunately we won't have data this year for the residue or the contamination, but we will still have the data for how much recyclables are coming in as part of the allocation.
And then, Tim, I was just going to add that the state does, I don't know if it's every 5 or I can't remember the breakdown, but basically it's a statewide waste characterization study. So really what they want to look at, is from a Washington state level, what's going into the landfill, and how do we prioritize policies, how do we evaluate programs. And it feeds into a lot of things, including what we used, because in general, I think we can rely quite a bit on state-level data to be somewhat representative of what we can see in Clark County. It's absolutely not perfect, but it's what we used for our for assessing, you know, what is an estimate of the food waste coming from Clark County going into the landfill. Based on statewide numbers, we can apply that to our population, and while it's not perfect, it gives us some good starting spots. But it's really just a big data point for the Department of Ecology to evaluate the effectiveness of their grant programs, to evaluate, you know, next most valuable targets going into the landfill, and the scale of some of the challenges that they're taking a look at with extended producer responsibility. And so really it's just a regular data process that the state goes through, and they go around the state and do this at a lot of different places so that they can get a representative sample. And I think they did, I think the last time, I can't remember when they included Clark County's data. It would have been the last time we did our own waste characterization study, which would be the same thing, but on a smaller scale specific to our county. So that, just in general, it doesn't really go back to Waste Connections and their ability to be evaluated on anything. It's just in general a way for the state to have the data about what is going into the landfill. And typically they're broken down into, I'm going to just say 64 different categories, because that's the last one that I was involved with, broke things down into 64 different categories. So it's just literally a lot of sorting through garbage. And putting it into buckets and weighing it and, you know, seeing what's there. So it's a very interesting process. If anybody wants to go down and observe, I don't know, Derek, you just clear that through you if you want to watch people sort through garbage. But it's pretty exciting stuff. It's a little bit of anthropology, if you want to sell it that way. So, and welcome back, Kyle. I saw you left for a minute. But it looks...
Luckily, false alarm, thankfully, so I'm back. Sorry about that. Does that wrap up questions about Waste Connections? Does anyone else have anything for Derek? Okay. Doesn't sound like any. Thank you, Derek, for the update. Next on our agenda, we have pesticide collections from farmers. So I'm going to start with Joe Zimmerman. He can kind of fill us in a little bit. He brought this topic up, and he can kind of fill us in on what some of his farm constituents were discussing, and then we'll bring in the other Joe, who can kind of talk to us a little bit about what the state has available and hopefully make a match.
Okay. Well, greetings, everyone. I'll get straight to the point here. This came about because back in January, we were, if you can believe this, we were at our national conference for Farm Bureau in beautiful Austin, Texas, eating some wonderful barbecue, by the way. And we met this company, and they said, you know, hey, we do pesticide recycling, you know, jug recycling around the nation, and if you guys would ever want to sponsor an event, we'd love to have you. And we said, great, where are you guys out of? Thinking, you know, oh, they're out of the Midwest or something. They said, nope, Brooks, Oregon. And so it was, in fact, if you guys saw that, the email, you know, that from the Washington State Department of Ag, I believe that's the same outfit they use, you know, the same outfit they linked to. Anyhow, so that's how it kind of came about. It came about from meeting that outfit in Austin, Texas there. And so we're just, I hope you guys understand, we're just at the beginning of kicking around this idea of kind of sponsoring an event, you know, to have people come together and recycle these chemical jugs. Now, I've got to tell you, and Joe, I can't wait to hear from you and what you have to say about it, but I knew that WSDA had, you know, sponsored these chemical amnesty opportunities and stuff like that. So, you know, what Farm Bureau was talking about, you know, kind of just being a jug collection and recycling. Boy, I don't know how this could come together or how this might come together, but boy, it might be a great opportunity to, you know, find a location and really get some, you know, potentially toxic chemicals that I can really envision, you know, winding up in landfills, and we probably don't want them there. So that's kind of the long and the short of it, guys. We're, like I said, as far as Farm Bureau is concerned, we're just at our initial idea phase, really.
Okay, Joe, so just so I kind of can clarify a little bit in my mind, are you talking about recycling of empty pesticides, or are you talking about recycling of the actual liquid pesticides as well, or what's kind of your vision?
Well, the original vision was really just empty pesticide jugs. But, you know, knowing that, and like I said, I already knew that the WSDA had a chemical, I don't know what the proper term, Joe Hoffman, maybe you can clarify here, but this chemical amnesty program, you know, kind of drop-off program, I knew about that. We did not intend to include something like that, but like I said, you know, if we plan something and it grows into something different, we're okay with that.
Oh, okay. This is Joe Hoffman. So, yeah, I'm prepared to talk about both things. So the one service that we offer is disposal of unusable pesticides. And so that could be, you know, truly old materials that are older than many of us. And then it could be someone who has switched their operation to organic in the last year. And so the products they have, they may be usable, but they don't want them anymore. And most growers, the one thing they don't want is a partial container from another grower, because you just can't guarantee that everything is fine inside of there or that it actually has what it says on the label. So let me get into the other side for a moment. Here is the recycling of the rinsed plastic pesticide containers. And that indeed, there's a national organization called the Ag Chemical Recycling Council. And they are funded by the large pesticide manufacturers and distributors in the U.S. And so what they do is they provide funding for grants. And so this Agriplast down in Brooks, Oregon, has the contract for Washington, Idaho, and Oregon to do container recycling. There is no charge for that. And people just need to contact the company directly. And they do work with, if an organization wants to have a collection day, or if they have space and they're willing to collect things over time, and then when they hit a certain point to where there's enough to have the contractor come, then they will do that. And so that's working directly with Agriplast. We just advertise that service, but we are not part of it. So that is truly a private and sponsored by the Pesticide Association provides the funding to that. So that's something you could work directly with Agriplast, and possibly the person you talked to was Alan, who is one of the part owners there. And I'm saying Joe, down in Austin, you probably talked with him. Alan Youngsma, Alan and Dari own that company. So anyway, they take most of the regular pesticide containers, and they also, if someone has is stuck with some old plastic shuttles, while that is not paid for by the ACRC, that is something that they will still collect. is the old shuttles, and then there's a company down, I believe they're in Washougal, that they can work with if that shuttle still has some material in it to get that cleaned out. And so what that company's interested is the cage, that like a cage tank that the shuttles come in, and they're looking for cages to put new bottles in, and then Agriplast could take the old bottle and recycle it. So that's, I guess before I go on, I can answer questions about the container recycling first.
Joe, I really don't have any major question about the container recycling. However, I would ask you, have there been groups in the past that have done, you know, let's say more public, you know, recycling day, you know, recycling days or something like that? By the way, even in our meeting, we talked about, you know, and one of the problems with Farm Bureau, by the way, is we tend to be farmer, you know, kind of farmer-centered or farmer-oriented. And we said, you know, hey, it'd be great to have a day all of us farmers in the county could get together. And I raised my hand and said, well, what about golf courses? You know, what about landscapers? What about, you know, and then, of course, the next one was, you know, what about the private citizens and stuff? So I'm just curious, has there been things, do you know of counties in the past that have had, you know, recycling days for this?
Typically, it's more of your distributor companies, let's say like a Wilbur Ellis or, what's the one in Central Washington that's moving a lot of stuff? Oh, I'm not going to come up with their name right at the moment.
Is it Agrian or Crop Production Services or Simplot?
Simplot has done some, but I was going to say Chamberlain Distributing up in Wenatchee.
Yeah,
And then Northwest Wholesale. And Northwest Wholesale, they have a deal with specifically for their customers that they can bring jugs and drums back to them at any time, any day that they're open, if you're a customer. Now, if you're not a customer, they do have days that they will take them in. But that is one of the services that they provide to their customers is when you come back in for something else, you can bring your jugs. Now, as far as a drop-off, Yakima County had tried a drop-off where people could come and bring their jugs. It was out at the solid waste transfer station. And what they had, the problem there, unless you had it staffed full-time, there were people who decided they didn't want to go across the scale and pay for garbage disposal, and guess where their stuff went?
Yeah.
It was in there along with the jugs. So that ended. Mm-hmm. They got rid of the containers because they could not afford to provide staff to basically sit there and watch that thing. So there are some. Our office over in Spokane has a shipping container behind it, but you have to make an appointment, and then they will unlock it, and you can put your jugs in, and then you drive away. Because the one thing you need to check when the jugs are coming in, are they truly clean enough for recycling? And that has been one of the things that some dealerships, you know, they get stuck. The recycler is only going to take the ones that they can truly recycle, grind up, don't have the chemical on them. And so the person hosting the site got stuck with some containers. Well, what we have done on a de minimis basis is go ahead and take them. And if you get stuck with containers that have some chemical in them, we'll go ahead and take them into our disposal program along with other pesticides. And so that a person doesn't have, you know, that liability that they're stuck with these jugs and now what do we do? But that's usually not on that day. A person would have to hold on to them since we don't own any facilities for anyone to take stuff through. So we travel around with our contractor. And so, yes, there are people that work with Agriplast and, you know, and have sites, but a lot of times what also happens if there's a large grower in your area that produces a lot of containers, what they will do is they'll schedule to come into that grower and then other people can come there while they're there working and mm-hmm. bring their jugs. And what they typically do, unless there's large volumes, on I-5 that they will send a semi-truck and just pick up the containers and get as many into the truck as they can. Now, in eastern Washington, where there's some pretty high volumes of containers, they have two portable chipping stations that have three-phase generators and motors on them and so on, and they will travel out to these larger areas and grind up the chip the containers right on site and put them into shipping bags and that, and then they can, you know, it's much more efficient because you're not traveling with a bunch of air in your truck. The one thing, it's an amazing thing, is how much that plastic weighs when it's chipped down into a bag. We're talking, you know, you don't fill a bag up. It's more than a ton of plastic that's in there. So, but anyway, that's the one issue is just making sure containers are clean. So you usually need somebody there watching. In Pennsylvania where they have stations where people can just drop them, what they require is people to put a number on them. And they give everybody that comes in, here's your number. And so as they're going through the containers, if they find contaminated ones with your number, you get a call and you get to come back and get them if they don't meet the specs. And then that's also what happens if AgriPlas is there and people are bringing them to them, is they will sort through them as they're coming off the vehicle and try to identify anything that can't be recycled and it goes back onto the customer's truck. They do take from growers, golf courses, commercial applicators, things of that sort. The ones they don't take is from, you mentioned, home consumers. And those are not under that ACRC program. You know, it's also something you don't want somebody throwing into the curbside with their number twos. And so that's kind of been a tough one is with homeowners. In most cases, because one person doesn't have much of a volume, that usually is something that ends up in trash. Or if there's something still in it, then at the local HHW site. But they do not provide for the retail, you know, small containers, the pints and the quarts and stuff like that. Any more questions on the recycling or?
Yes. What about the small acreage farmers?
Yes, they will take any of the materials that are made for agriculture. They will take those containers in. And so even if they are the pints or you know, some of the most expensive stuff comes in quart bottles. So they do take those containers in. And what, Joe was mentioning, if Farm Bureau or someone else set up a day or a site or whatever, then it would be advertising for people to bring their empties over to that place on that day or that week or however things get scheduled. There are some of the pesticide dealerships in central Washington have cages or large bags, and so that's like with Northwest Wholesale where people can bring them at any time. They just keep bagging them up as people bring them until the day when AgriPlas then shows up to take them. And so it's however a person wants to work it, and I will say AgriPlas this last year, out of Washington, Oregon, and Idaho, collected 20% of all the containers in the U.S. that got recycled. And out of Washington State, there was over 1 million pounds of the recycled containers.
No, the WSU Extension Service has the small farms program here. They do quite a bit of outreach, and I could see maybe some collaboration, not knowing very much about, you know, the effort going forward, but I come from a family, we have a farm as well, and I can see where that would be very that would be a very good thing to have a disposal option. Thank you.
Okay, Joe and Joe, thanks for giving us a little insight into the pesticide plastic recycling. I had no idea.
And then I can
truly went into it.
And then I can also mention that we do have the program that gets rid of the containers that still contain pesticides.
Okay.
And I sent Kim, did you get that email today, Kim?
Yeah, I forwarded that along. And,
okay.
I think what might be a great next step is if the Joes want to continue the conversation. We've got a pretty big agenda,
yeah.
The rest of it. And I'd love to talk the details, and the county staff is here to assist in making whatever is the best path forward for making something happen for our agricultural as well as potentially other businesses. I think it'd be good to meet up to talk those details out and figure them out.
Okay. And what I was going to mention about that email there that I sent you is the part that was the email, we had actually distributed that yesterday out to people that had pesticide licenses. And so that can be sent to anyone that you wish. We're looking for customers by the 15th of September, and then that will determine with COVID what we're having to change to this fall is rather than collection events, unless something changes above the groupings of 10, we're going to be out doing direct pickups at the farms and businesses. So that's where we're looking for people who need the assistance to let us know, and then we will work directly with them to go and get the stuff from their place. So you have the contact information there, and Mr. Zimmerman, go ahead and tomorrow or whatever day, give me a ring or an email, and then we can discuss further. And I thank you very much, Kim, for inviting me to the meeting. I really appreciate it. And if there's no further questions, then I'll drop off and let you guys continue with your business.
Thanks, Joe. Really appreciate it.
Okay.
And I just had one quick addition real quick to if either Joe wants to lay on before we go, is that one of the next steps might also be use. Some of you may have, I think we've met Jessica Fishberg a couple of times, who's working on some special waste things. So one next area might be one of her next projects is going to be small quantity generators, which are, you know, might fall within the lines of not massive amounts of hazardous waste, but more than a resident. So kind of in that gray area in the middle. So, Joe, Jessica, maybe we may encourage Jessica to reach out to you, Joe Zimmerman, to kind of start the conversation about expanding upon what a small quantity generating customer might look like, because I think you shed some light on that. So that would be really great. So I'll probably connect Jessica with you next, Joe Zimmerman. And then Joe Hoffman, thank you very much for presenting and kind of opening our eyes to some of the opportunities that are out there. So thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Yeah, Joe, thank you very much for the information. And I just want to let you know that Mr. Zimmerman is my dad, okay?
Okay.
I'm just going to call you Zimmy. Zimmy, Zimmer.
Joe Jr. Z-Man.
Z-Man, that works well. Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, thank you guys. I appreciate it. That was definitely some interesting stuff that I have not really thought about. So kind of cool to get a look into a different world that I'm not super familiar with. Next, we are actually going to go a little bit out of order on our agenda, and we're going to go with the regional system study update from Mike. So, Mike, if you could hop on and give us your update, I would appreciate it.
So I'm going to be real quick on this. We're still progressing with the overall study. What I wanted to talk tonight about was what had been brought up earlier about the traffic issues at primarily Central. Task 3 of that report focused on economic options to potentially reduce traffic at Central. Those included evaluating fee structures, expanding days of operation at the other two transfer stations, West Van and Washougal, and then expanding days of operations at the HHW facility at all three facilities. The idea behind expanding the days of operation is to hopefully spread them out on weekends. And HHW and recycling customers at Central, they're kind of concentrated in a couple of days. And it's surprising we've had customer counts going through that building at over 400 in a day. So the idea with that is that, once again, hopefully we can spread them out and give them other options on those Sundays to go somewhere else. Basically, where we're at is we've completed the review of those items. They're kind of set aside in tasks right now, so we're in the process of organizing a report that focuses just on these traffic options. And that should be ready for an initial review by SWAC sometime in September. And what we're requesting is that we form a small subcommittee to have that group review it first. And then at the full November meeting, they will provide an update, and we'll decide at that time if, based on their questions and what comes out of that, you know, initial meeting with the subcommittee, if we need to have JR May there at the meeting to provide additional information. And we're trying to keep costs down, so if we don't have a ton of questions, we'll just bring a PowerPoint and staff will do it. But that's pretty much my update for right now. And like I said, if you want to work with Kim to get something set up, obviously Julie, Rich, and Derek are already involved in this. And so we really kind of want to move this forward. I don't know how quickly we could get recommendations and potentially move it forward into implementation. But that's part of our overall strategy. As Derek mentioned, these accidents are starting to become more frequent. And we know that improving the access will help some, but we've just got to look at other ways to get them to go somewhere else. And so that's what we've been looking at. And like I said, that's the sum of the update for tonight. We will be bringing quite a bit more later this fall, and we'll talk about that more at the November meeting. The full phase one report is getting close. And the expectation is, you know, we'll have some kind of report on that in November and possibly form another subcommittee or the same subcommittee to review that as well.
And did you say, Mike, that this subcommittee would probably have one meeting in September and one meeting in October?
Probably distribute it in September and, you know, not actually meet, more of a Q&A via email. And then have more of a meeting, you know, a Zoom meeting or whatever in October. So I think by then that'll give ample time to answer initial questions, and then we can kind of go over it, come up with some recommendations to bring the SWAC. That's typically in the past how, you know, we've done work with subcommittees.
Okay, Mike, one question for you just so I'm clear on what you're asking. So you're asking for a couple members from SWAC, and this is just related to the traffic and from task three, is that correct?
That's
correct. For a subcommittee that would – so a couple members who are interested in maybe providing some input and are familiar with the traffic issues at Central to give you some input on what you come up with for the solutions for task three.
Yeah, it's pretty numbers-oriented. It's, you know, financials and traffic counts and those kinds of things. And some of it's anecdotal, but some of it's pretty hard data as well. So if someone's interested, like I said, I'm not sure how this group has gone about this. We're, like I said, there's a lot of new members. And so I'm just going to kind of ask that you work with Kim and kind of come up with, you know, some volunteers to work with us on that.
How many do you need?
Two or three, Kim?
I mean, do you all feel confident enough right now to make a vote on that?
Yeah, I guess let's open up for discussion, and if anyone has any input on creating this or would like to the opportunity to work on this with Mike, speak now.
I wouldn't mind joining. I like working with Mike.
Thanks, Tim.
You do?
Yeah. I'll send you that $30 I offered to pay you to say that, Tim, in the mail.
Yeah. I thought it was $300. It's only $30? Oh.
Gotta read the fine print. It's a lot of fees.
I'd be willing to be on a committee. I'm about half a mile away from Central right now, so.
Oh, you know the problems.
Yeah, Joe, it sounds like you'd be a perfect person if you're driving by it all the time. I've been there. I'm not super familiar with it. So we've got two members. Is anyone else? Simone, I know you had mentioned, you had talked about the traffic accidents out there. I don't know if it's something you have time for or interested in, but we have at least two, so I think we could at least get off the ground with what we have now.
Yeah, and that works if that's, I know everybody's busy, and I just want to start bouncing it off, folks. And like I said, Derek and Rich are also familiar, so they can chime in at the main meeting as well.
Okay, so Kim, just so I am doing this properly, do we need to make a motion to form the subcommittee and vote on it?
Yeah, I think that'd probably be best. And Simone, were you interested or not? I saw you turn your camera on, so I wasn't sure if you had something.
Sorry, I missed that, Simone.
Okay. I better pass on that right now since I'm involved in the other subcommittee, so.
Perfect. No problem at all. Can we get someone to make a motion in a second to form the committee?
Is that a forward? We form a committee to assist with the regional system study review, particularly on the focusing on the transportation traffic issues at Central. It sounds like Tim and Joe are willing to serve, so I'd move that.
I could second that.
Perfect. Sounds like we've got a plan. So I'm guessing moving forward that, Mike, once you have that task three officially buttoned up, you can get it to Tim and Joe for their review and then schedule between you guys and Kim a subcommittee meeting about that.
Yep, that'll work.
And I think
Oh. Did y'all make a vote? I was checking. I mean, I saw the motion and the seconded, but was it unanimous or did anybody?
Let's do a vote real quick. I guess that's kind of what we should do. So let's just do a vote of hands. If anyone, or assuming we're all going to vote yes, raise your hand. If anyone wants to vote no, speak now. Okay, so vote passes. We've got the subcommittee, and Mike and Kim will be reaching out to Tim and Joe for getting that rolling. Thank you, guys. I appreciate you volunteering your time. I know we're all very busy people, but...
And I should say...
Go ahead, Travis.
I was going to say, before Mike leaves, I really feel like I should throw a caveat out there that I'm allowed to say stuff about that because I gave myself a concussion earlier this week, and Mike made some comments to the effect of, I thought you had to have a brain to get a concussion, so I just had to get even.
All is fair in love and war.
It was more like I'm going to the doctor to have him look at my brain. I told him I don't know if there's anything to be seen.
Just an empty black mass.
Right?
Okay.
So
let's move forward.
Off. Thank you.
All right. Thanks,
Mike. Have a good night.
You too.
We're going to circle back around now to the subcommittee updates, and we're going to start with the bylaws. It looked like Kim had sent out a updated version that we had kind of discussed last meeting about updating the bylaws, and she was nice enough to update that document for us. Hopefully you all had time to read that, and I'll go ahead, Kim. Let's just open up discussion on it.
Yeah, so the document I sent out was made by Simone and Rich. And I was going to reformat it just at the request of the subcommittee, but there were some notes on there, and I didn't want to, make any executive decisions without it going before the SPAC first. So that's why you'll see a lot of comments and stuff. But at the end is the bylaws recommendations to amend. So that's the bylaws at the end of it. Is that section. So I didn't do any of it. I just have some comments in there.
Okay, well, thank you for correcting me. It sounds like it was a Rich and Simone effort, so I appreciate you guys doing that. Does anyone have any comments about the the bylaws updates or anything that this kind of looks, when I looked through it, it seemed like it was mostly the things we had discussed a lot in the previous meeting about attendance policy and that sort of things. And it looked pretty good to me. I was pretty happy with the updates that you guys had done. So any other comments?
I know one thing that you all talked about was meeting more often, and I don't remember where that left off. If you want to continue quarterly, amending the bylaws for these suggestions, just to maintain like status quo on and formalize what's already going on, it's kind of what's in here. But I know, you know, if you're going to amend the bylaws right now for these, it'd be a good time to amend it for anything else if you were to move on that.
Yeah, from what I recall about the update to the meetings is we kind of, where we left it off was it seemed, in my recollection, that we left it off at the quarterly meetings, and then the, it looked like there was an option in there to call meetings as needed. Is that correct? I'm trying to find it right now, but.
Yeah, sorry, I should have reread the minutes before.
Yeah, I think there would be the option to, both the option and expectation, I guess, or maybe that was a question that was still on the table, was the expectation that we meet quarterly with opportunities to call special meetings if something comes up, as well as to continue regularly communicating with the subcommittees and working on projects. And that we can also, you know, in order to help prep for these meetings, like Kim already does, but we can, you know, do more of it, is to distribute the information before the meeting so that people have time to get caught up and be to show up well and ask questions and be prepared to discuss what we're discussing. So just trying to, I think one of the questions that we wanted to answer that I don't think came through, it wasn't necessarily a bylaws topic, but just what types of communications would you want from us in the interim between our quarterly meetings so that everybody feels connected without over communicating, but without such a large gap that we're trying to remember every time we get together what we did last quarter. So I don't know if that's a bylaws conversation or something else, but really just what type of interim communication does the SWAC want and need between meetings? And what can we expect you to have time to be able to read and study up on? So.
It seems like we should disconnect that from the bylaws discussion, right? I'm looking at the meeting minutes from last time, and everybody says, yeah, quarterly meetings seem to be enough. So are we, there's two documents here. There's a recruitment document and a bylaws document. Are we kind of looking at both these at once, or are we looking at the bylaws one now?
And then I was attempting to take the bylaws one, and then we have a little bit further down on our agenda the recruitment one. So let's try to dig in on the bylaws first and look at those and make sure everyone is satisfied. I do, like you said, Tim, I do remember most people agreed that quarterly meetings seemed to be adequate, and then, you know, some communications from staff in the interim via email, and then SWAC emailing back and forth to discuss issues that came up, you know, and then Travis had mentioned, you know, the prep time for meetings. So yeah, that's a little bit different than the bylaws, I would agree.
Yeah, the other part of that discussion on meetings, and look, to keep talking about the subject we're not talking about, is we did talk about education workshops or some way of, you know, so anyway, in the bylaws.
Yeah, no, yeah, that's a good point. We did talk about, and we can, I'm assuming, I can't see Jacob's face. I think he might still be awake. I can't see his face, but okay. One of the things that we do need to talk about is how do we get these educational things. I think we'd kind of hoped last time that we might be in a better spot now, but we can continue to look for what opportunities. I mean, we can send you all webinars and online courses, but that's not nearly as informative or really what is going to be helpful for you. So I think that's just on our radar. We have a lot of tours that we would like to give once things kind of open up a little bit more, but that's another item that we, I'm glad you remember that, but that we need to work on is those trainings and the educational opportunities and getting everybody a chance to see the system that you're advising us on. So.
Yeah, thanks for bringing that up again, Tim. I did really like that idea of some workshops and some stuff in the interim, you know, tours, things like that, that we could get involved with. But I do agree, Travis, unfortunately, with the COVID situation, we kind of have to put some of those things on hold, I feel like, you know, and
at least those in-person type things. Maybe we could get some sort of Zoom workshop going on some topic that staff might have, or sounds like Joe, you know, with the pesticide things like that, you know, some special interest things maybe. So turning it back to the bylaws, does anyone have any comments or suggestions on these updates?
They're pretty mild changes overall, right? I mean, just adjusting the number of members, talking about attendance, talking about our new subcommittees.
I think it's just a lot of cleanup language, Tim, like you said, you know, adding in the subcommittees that we're going to have, you know, on a regular basis written in the bylaws is the biggest update, I would say.
Well, one item that, as Tim was just mentioning, so we have article number 5 is on meetings, and that really refers to formal meetings that are probably promoted, publicized, notes are taken. I suppose we could add a piece in there about informal educational meetings for the group, where those don't have to be like an official meeting with a quorum. I'm not sure if that would be like another sentence on that particular meeting, saying there can be informal meetings that don't fit any of the above subsections. So that would be one question. Do we want to have something maybe included in 5 or someplace separately about informal meetings? And then the language that we put into the Article 6 for committees, that was just proposed as draft, and I think is open for discussion, wordsmithing, so it was kind of thrown out there. Based on we've had discussions in the past about a legislative committee and then the recruitment committee. So, and I think there's also probably ad hoc committees, which I think is what the one for the regional system study that just formed. So again, we could probably add, I don't know, ad hoc committee as another piece.
Yeah, I think Travis had some language suggestions for for both of them. So yeah, that's good to know. Draft language, and I don't want to speak for you, Travis, but I know there was some stuff that you wanted to make sure was captured correctly so that we don't anger our council or anything like that.
There could be a letter C that just say other committees may be formed as needed, right?
Yeah, I think that might be something that would be simple and easy and flexible. You know, you don't want to have such rigid bylaws. We don't have flexibility. So, yeah, just adding a C that says, you know, something like other ad hoc subcommittees will be formed as needed.
Yeah, and I think my only language correction is that I think it was just to acknowledge the process that the legislative committee goes through, that it is that there's a process that involves council, that this legislative, that this SLAC needs to engage council, and that we've identified how we do that, but it isn't, we can't go rogue, because then that's really it. So that was just more that we would make a recommendation for council and then follow council's recommendation as to whether they take the lead on that, on those efforts at a state, at a legislative level, or if we individually as SWAC are directed to take the lead on that. Or the third option is to get council to say, no, we want you to participate in that in no way. And then the SWAC has a choice to make on whether or not everybody wants to go rogue and do it on their own time. But really, it's just more about outlining that process. And that's Kyle. Are you on the legislative committee? Because now I'm a little bit concerned.
Yeah, I am. So I'll get excited. No. Yeah, I do hear you on that, and maybe your language that you want to add about communicating with the councils not in the documents we had presented to us. So it sounds like at this point maybe we need to add something about that with the legislative committee, and then also add a section about the subcommittee ad hoc, and then maybe circle back around for next meeting about getting these approved and formalized.
So how does the document, that the recruitment document that we've also been handed out, fit with this document? I mean, we have a description, there's somewhat of a description in the bylaws, but then there's this other two-page document that's been written. How are the two tied together?
So I'll take a stab at that first, Tim. I really feel like, I mean, to use ambiguous terms, I really feel like what's in the charter is the vision, and the document that Simone and Rich put together is the, you know, the how we get to that. So while that provides very, I won't say vague, but high level detail on what that group is intended to do, what Rich and Simone created was a document that could be more living and updated to reflect how we go about doing that. And I would say that there isn't officially a policy / legislative document, but Kim and I, early on when we met with Jason and worked with Lindsay and council, really kind of created a version of that in conversation on how we go about doing that. So there really should be a separate document, a third, I guess, another document that talks about with the legislative subcommittee, here's how that work is done. That's kind of mine. So that's kind of how I've been interpreting it, is that the other two pager is really the actual actions. And what's in the charter is more of a high level determination that it needs to exist and why, but not how, I guess. So.
Right. So do you keep the language light in the bylaws and refer to this separate document that you prepare for each subcommittee that you have, and you put the detail in that? Does that make sense?
That's a good idea. So the charters are like an addendum to the charters that define these subcommittees are like an addendum to the bylaws, and they live on their own. So they're not being, they're, all the full details aren't in the bylaws themselves. Is that what you're saying?
Right, yes. Because otherwise you end up having conflicting language, possibly.
Yeah, so the bylaw or the committee section could say, you know, the committee shall have a recruitment committee and a legislative committee at a minimum. Other committees can be formed by a majority vote of the council. Each committee is required to come up with a charter that's approved, or however you want it to be approved.
So, yeah, that sounds, I kind of would agree with Tim that that might be the best way to go, you know, having our bylaws, you know, the less kind of, you know, detail we're digging into on the bylaws, that gives us a little more flexibility, and it just would be cleaner, in my view, to have just, you know, the committees listed and how many members and how we appoint the members to each committee, basically, in the bylaws, and then we'd have our kind of guiding documents on the recruitment committee, and then it sounds like we could, as a legislative committee, create something similar for that subcommittee as well.
Yeah, maybe you just have something in there that these guiding documents are created, and if there's any procedure to be followed for changing those documents, that can be in the bylaws.
So for next steps on that, I really want you all to be autonomous, but I'm here to assist in any way that you need my help on these sort of things. So.
Go ahead. Kyle, go ahead. Oh, well, you muted yourself. Oh, that was quick. You're fast, Kyle. I was going to just a starting point to propose that myself and the legislative committee could work on a statement and, you know, take the bylaws as they're written and kind of propose a light statement related to the legislative committee. Perhaps Kim and Rich and Simone, we could take a stab. You guys could take a quick stab at just that. And then I can also work with Jason and Kyle on drafting of something similar to what Simone and Rich drafted for the recruitment position for the legislative that really outlines the steps that it takes and that kind of thing. So we can divide and conquer, and then, you know, I'd be more than happy to take a stab at the legislative portion, maybe Kim at the other one based on what we've heard, and then we could send those out to the subcommittees respectively for their feedback. That way we can take lead on that but get some feedback before we finalize anything and bring that back for a vote. So that's just one proposal, divide and conquer. So
that sounds good to me, Travis, for a plan moving forward. And, yeah, we could possibly get the legislative committee, which I correct me if I'm wrong, people, but that was me, Jason, and Tim were all involved in that, and we could kind of come up with maybe, it sounds like you have something with Jason worked out a little bit in your minds, and we could build off of that to do something similar to what the recruitment subcommittee did.
Yeah, our council advisor. Our council advisor walked us pretty clearly through a step-by-step process. It's been a while since Jason and I had a chance to talk about it, so it'll probably be good to refresh all of our memories and to get you and Tim up to speed so we can create something as a group. So, and it's getting close to that time anyways. We are going to need to start working on that in the coming months, so it's probably a good time to refresh everybody's memory and get up to speed. So,
okay, so I think we've knocked out bylaws we talked about. Kim, do we want to, and maybe Rich and Simone, talk about, we have our open position still, so maybe turn the page towards the recruitment section of our subcommittee and get an update on where we're at with our opening, and can you give us a little just update on what's going on there and where you guys are at with that?
Before you all move on, I just want to make sure I capture this correctly. So it sounds like there's three things that you need to be worked on moving forward. And a new draft of the bylaws with that language that we mentioned that will be sent out for vote potentially by email or at the next committee. And then the charter for the legislative and then the charter for the recruitment.
Yes, that's what I think. If anyone else is in disagreement, you know, speak up. But, yeah, I think that's where we're at.
And then who was assigned the bylaws one?
I can do a quick update in the bylaws and work on that document.
And then, I think it would be good if Rich and Simone want to walk through what they put together, which is really pretty cool, the first two pages of that document that was emailed out.
Simone, do you want to jump in? So I'll jump in, I guess. Yes. Hi, Simone. Do you want to jump in too, or?
Sorry, I had a barking dog. I had to go put him away, so I wouldn't annoy you.
They wanted us to give a little bit of a summary of the two page thing we talked about. So Simone and I worked on that and shared it with the SWAC, I think in after the May meeting, and got a little bit of feedback and then kind of ran it by again. And I think folks were okay with it, but I think there's been some other potential changes or refinements in the meantime. So those are the comments that are shown or the inserts that are added are kind of after that time. One idea was to get rid of the graphic at the bottom, and I'm totally fine with that if that doesn't really add to people understanding it.
I have one question, and this is kind of to Kim or to Rich or to Travis or to Simone, but in my recollection of some of the discussions we've had at previous meetings, there was concern about the amount of work required to actually go out and recruit somebody and find somebody, and a lot of this fell on Kim to do. It was taking quite a bit of her time, and now that we're trying to incorporate diversity and inclusion and some of these other things, it was even going to be more time consuming. My question is whether our new committee provides the assistance that Kim really needs when it comes to recruiting and getting new people on this committee.
I think that was our intent, that we kind of provide input initially and kind of like, how do we need, what diversity direction should we go when we do the new recruitment, when something's open? And say these are the skills and the other attributes of potential candidates that would be ideal. to be able to kind of grow diversity on the SWAC. And then once we have that, and then we, and there's an announcement like, hey, we're recruiting for the at-large position, and we've kind of indicated, hey, we think we need, you know, more gender diversity or more racial diversity, then I think the committee can kind of help do the outreach for those groups by talking to the people in the community that would be, or the segments in the community that represent some of those underrepresented groups. So I think that, that did have the intent that we would support that as it got developed, but we don't really lead the development of the recruitment announcement and all of that. So we're, once we have that, I think we're good to kind of like work as a subcommittee and with the SWAC at large to kind of do outreach to the those segments of the community that would potentially provide candidates. There is, I think, is an overriding piece. We want people to be interested in solid waste to start with. So, I mean, that's a key for anybody that's on the committee. But I think we could also diversify the committee by doing an outreach to groups that kind of represent those underrepresented community segments.
I concur.
Yeah, so that's kind of my recollection of the discussions too, is that while the subcommittee wouldn't, you know, head up everything, they would be basically assisting Kim once we've got the at-large and other openings available, you know, they, and I think we could all help in reaching out too, you know, it's not just falls on the subcommittee, but that would be kind of something they'd be willing to take on a little bit further than maybe just the rest of us, you know, mentioning to people we know and reaching out to the constituents we represent. So a little more concerted effort, I guess.
I had a quick question, if I might jump in real quick, Kyle. I'm just kidding. I'm asking you permission just to be nice. No, I'm just kidding. So I did have a question, and I want to preface this by, I'm hopeful that this is a safe space and that my question is not born of ignorance, but just seeking to understand. In the strategy for recruitment, in the middle, I have it highlighted here that the how we go about, and Rich, you said it, how we go about identifying what the needs of the SWAC committee, what SWAC is. So you called out a couple of specific areas that we're looking for more diversity in, and I'm wondering how we how this group is going to define diversity and what it means for our SWAC and what our goal is. So is our goal to have a SWAC that is representative of the population of the county in all of those categories, or are we going to look at the group as a whole and determine whether there's unbalance is in any of those areas there altogether? So, for example, how would we say that we need, are we going to be, do we need data? Do we need breakdowns of our population in order to determine what the needs of the SWAC are? Or is this group just going to have a discussion and decide we need X on this committee because we don't see it here, regardless of how it meets up with the demographics of our current county as it is? I don't know if that question makes sense. I'm trying to say it generically, and how do we know that our SWAC right now isn't an accurate reflection of our county's population and demographics? And how are we going to apply that information to making a selection and determining what we need?
So I don't think we can really have, and I think we said it, we don't really have a quota. So, yeah. You know, I think the county's probably half women, half men, and we don't really have that representation now. Mm-hmm. So I think that's an easy call, like, hey, okay, we could do that. But I think in terms of representing every group, I don't think we're trying to kind of like fill a quota, like we're only going to talk to you because you're of this particular demographic. But I think in terms of like, hey, let's do out more out. We're not getting candidates. So obviously let's try and outreach to different people than we normally get that got us who we have now. And I don't think there's a databasis for that. I think it's more, hey, we know who we are now and we know who's represented. We've got too many bald guys. And I can say that because I are one, but I think we, I'm not sure what the data is on how many bald people there are.
Temporarily bald.
I think with the hairdressers being closed, there's probably a lot more people now that have long hair, but they're underrepresented maybe. I don't know.
Yeah, if I could.
Yeah. Go ahead, Kim.
Oh, so right now, the county does not have a policy that I can apply. So my hands are really tied as far as going beyond without any sort of direction. And so, like, what's really awesome about this is that this is the SWAC creating that policy. And so I think what Travis is getting at is we need to make sure that this is, it sets very specific, like, this is what we're going to look at. Just like you said, you know, the committee will aim to have, you know, 50% or, you know, gender diversity, or, you know, it needs to be a little bit more specific on, like, how it's determined, how those things are determined, so that we don't get in trouble, which is kind of ridiculous, but it's the truth. I mean, it's just kind of the truth. It's as what the county, the sort of precedent it has, is if there's no policy to do it, you shouldn't be doing it, basically. And so to help in these recruitment efforts.
And just one quick caveat to that.
At the last, Kim. You kind of faded out at the end.
Oh, sorry. I don't know.
Oh, what was the last sentence you
said? I don't remember. Right.
I'll just throw in real quick one more caveat to what Kim said. Getting in trouble is a bummer, but this is an area where we are already stepping up as a program. Like I said, we are probably one of the few programs that are already engaged in an equity and diversity strategic plan and taking those steps to really have that conversation as it relates to our program. So I'm not as concerned about getting in trouble because this is something that we're willing to carry water for and talk to our council and to be able to lay the appropriate groundwork to get what this group wants to get done and feels like it needs to get done. So while Kim is right, sometimes we have to walk on eggshells. This is not an area where eggshells are as abundant, nor do I really, well, I care, but this is an important thing. What I really want is that we just have some base level of understanding in how we're going to go about determining what gaps the SWAC has, because while we can do that very easily from a technical expertise level or an experiential level, I just want to challenge this group to think about how we're going to go about evaluating those gaps that are less, I don't want to say tangible, but less outlined in some of our policies and outlined in some of our practices that can be easily applied to expertise. So I just want to understand more about how this group is going to identify the gaps so that I can carry that forward and share that this is what this group is going to be doing. Not because I don't want it to work, but because I really want to know how to help and support this outside of the SWAC. So.
What about looking at the historical data of the SWAC committee through the years? Look at the data of the community, the current populations. You know, there's multicultural, there's gender, there's multifamily, you know, there's folks that live in all different kinds of scenarios. And I think, you know, overall, if you were to do even go beyond SWAC and look at all the committees in the county or the commissions, you'd probably see pretty much what we have here. And there are other communities in this county that are invisible, and I don't think that's right. So that's why I feel like this is so important. It's not an option to me. You know, and I've been on this committee or this commission since 2015, and, you know, it's something that I think we really need to address. And I know the county's a little bit behind on this, but, you know, we can pull data, but, you know, it's pretty obvious to me. But I understand what you're saying about needing that sort of baseline to deal with.
Yeah, and I agree, Simone. I think that makes a lot of sense. That there's a lot of data that we can pull from, and some of it's intuitive, and some of it comes from everybody's experience out in the community that not all of us share. So is there a process that we can document to help us share how we're going to be identifying those unheard communities and underrepresented communities and then recruit for them? So,
At least raise awareness so that people have an option. There's, like I said, the invisible, it shouldn't be that way. There should be more representation for this work that we're doing. We should have more input, and thank you for supporting that.
Does the county have a diversity coordinator or somebody who can, this is kind of sensitive language that we're trying to write here, and we want to do it correctly. How can we get some assistance in defining this as you've suggested, Travis?
We don't have a diversity committee. I just realized Kim unmuted herself and she can talk a little bit, or we don't have any. They're scrambling. Well, I don't mean to talk. The county is putting a lot of effort right now into bringing a coordinator or consultants on board to help identify a lot of this stuff. Kim's shaking her head now. They're bringing on.
Is council on board with that or driving that, or is that staff driving that?
We're driving it within our program. So a lot of this, Kim, I want us to get down what's important and let me deal with council on that and to figure out how to, I want the language to be clear to this group, what this group wants it to mean. And then if we need to massage it later on for council's sake, that's fine. But right now I think, not that we're, I use the phrase going rogue a lot, but I think right now this is important and this is something that needs to happen at a program level. So I guess what I'm saying is we can go out and get some help. We have a committee that Kim is a part of that could help with some of the language. We could have them review it. There is no formal council. Aside from the headlines you've read, there is no formal council statement or position or policy or action list that's happening right now. It's kind of happening in small chunks. So that might be a good place for us to go, is get this language where the group really wants it to be. And then we take it to EDIG, our equity, diversity, and inclusion group. And those are right now serving as our main experts on this type of thing. So there's no coordinator. There is a committee that we could take this to help with the language. But
Yeah, I think that would be a good next step, is if this language is very less paragraphy and more bullety, just like these are the steps, like these are the things that are going to be looked at. These are the current demographics. These are the current, here's a spreadsheet or whatever of the current makeup of the SWAC, and here's the gaps that this committee has identified. And then that I can take to our public health equity, diversity, and inclusion group, which I'm on as a co-chair. That group is a volunteer group of employees. I have been leading since 2006 efforts on diversity within our public health department. And there's no equity coordinator for the county. It's something we've been advocating for the last few years, but there has not been the public support to get the council to move on that. So right now there is no paid person that works at the county that can help us. It's just our volunteer group at Public Health, which we're very passionate folks. So we'll definitely be able to help as much as we can to make this be successful. But ultimately this commission is a commission of the council that our program facilitates. So like this commission is not a program. So we have to always keep that in mind. It's what I was kind of saying earlier.
Another piece, and it was kind of sort of the excuse to use the Rubik's Cube as a graphic, was kind of the concept that we've got kind of like three dimensions kind of overlaying. We're all on the commission representing some sort of position, whether it's a North County or Southeast County or city of small cities. So everybody's representing a position. But I think we also each bring some experience, skills, and interest. Tim's an engineer, and we've got people that are in business. We've got people that are in the trades. So I think there's that other piece that we bring, that we don't want everybody to be a teacher, but it would sure be good to have somebody that was a teacher I think Jack Allen does that role, right? Kind of had the teaching experience. And so I think there's that dimension as well as the community demographic piece, which is probably the most apparent piece we need to address. But I think we also kind of want to provide that balance and not have a bunch of, you know, municipal employees because they're all bureaucrats and we all think alike, right? So it's good to bring people with more difference of opinions and life experiences or people that are interested in reuse and waste reduction really as a passion, as opposed to people like Derek that just want to landfill stuff. Oh, he is awake. He is awake.
Okay. That's my boss, not
got
me.
That little dig in there, Rich. Rich.
Oh, yeah. No, Derek's a great recycler.
Yeah. I'm in Portland. You got to do it. I think it's also it's we're going through the same process right now within our organization, and similar to what Travis was saying, how we are kind of going rogue at our site because company wide may be a completely different feeling, and so it's a real challenging thing. And we have a similar issue where we lack a lot of diversity in our managerial ranks, and so we're digging in on how we can do better in that area. I know the Portland Haulers Association has also been doing this process with the 15 to 20 or so companies down there in the solid waste industry. And so we're actually, as a company, we're going to make a $5,000 or $10,000 donation in the next couple of weeks here to a couple of entities that focus on, we're kind of targeting recruiting of a more diverse workforce in communities, minority communities in Clark County, and then also how do we get more women into trades and women into managerial positions. That's kind of the areas that we've decided we can target as a group locally and make some differences and really try and be proactive on that.
So I'm kind of wondering, landfill, yeah. We'll give you your standing ovation later on, Derek. I'm going to propose something. What if I'm also kind of realizing that there are a couple of projects happening in tandem that could really benefit from a little bit of overlap or crossover, whatever the right term is. So like I mentioned, we have a team of four that are putting together a plan for our program on equity and inclusion and environmental justice. And a big part of that is doing some benchmarking. So I think like Simone had said, we are behind the curve as a county. And there are a lot of shining examples or a lot of examples of counties and jurisdictions that have gone out, have asked the appropriate voices what needs to be done and identified some of those gaps. And so there's a research phase, but part of that is also gathering the data on the demographics of our community. I feel like maybe we could get this document in a good place and then just put a reserved placeholder for identifying what that process looks like once we can share what our solid waste group is working on for our program, maybe just kind of holding off on this until that group can get caught up and then sharing that information that we learn. So that's benchmarking against other plans and maybe looking at what their SWACs have in mind or the language that they have. Largely King County is one of the big ones that we're looking at, as well as Metro. And then we also have our community development has a really, really new and I haven't spent a lot of time playing around with it, but they do have a demographic and community tool that breaks Clark County down into a lot of different demographics and characteristics by area. So I think what we could probably do is rather than sit here and try and figure out what the process is, let that group, Kim, the other group that Kim is a part of, get caught up. We can share that information. And then maybe it's a joint effort to come up with a process for SWAC. Because it sounds like we need some more information. And this is a really great start. So I don't know if that's just one proposal, is that we kind of leave a placeholder here for the process and then come back once we have more information from a solid waste perspective program-wide.
One thing that I do wanted to mention is I don't know how long I'll be able to continue saying to council, we're working on this, we're working on filling that all county spot, whatever it's called.
The at large spot.
At large, there we go. So I'm wondering if there's something we could, the commission tonight could vote on that would give sort of like move forward and recruit someone, Rich and Simone, assist and get that going. Like we'll get this document figured out, but like, I don't think I can wait until the next council or the next committee meeting. Sorry, it's getting a little late. I can't talk. I'm not sure if I'm going to be able to keep punting it that long.
Yeah, I'm glad you're circling back around that. So that's what I was going to bring up too. Is like, yeah, we've had this vacancy for, I think, 6 months, maybe more, somewhere in that range. So yeah, I do think that we just, at this point, probably need to move forward with the at-large recruitment and get Simone and Rich maybe. And we can, you know, not to use Travis's term, go rogue, but we can reach out to communities that we've just identified without doing sort of this data-driven. And the data-driven aspect is great, don't get me wrong, but that's going to take time to get that data collected and where we're lacking and what we're missing. But we can kind of see, obviously, like Rich said, females. We're obviously lacking that area, so maybe we can do some outreach to certain groups like that who have influence in those areas and can move that at-large recruitment in that direction, possibly.
So one idea is, and I think Travis highlighted on page 2 the area in blue. So the last sentence in there says, for the current county at-large position, the committee recommends that the highest consideration be given for individuals that are also female, members of a racial or ethnic minority, younger than 40, a multifamily tenant, and or that have experience in education and or outreach fields. Is that an okay statement that we can pass on to whomever at the county leads the recruitment to put that as part of the request?
I mean, the commission could vote tonight to say, hey, we want the recruitment to be these things. And the only amendment I would add to that is the fact that it says female. I would also include something like self-identified, like cisgender or something like that. So it's not a dichotomy of male and female, but rather anybody, you know, that is self-identifying themselves as other than heteronormative male. Basically, anyone that's not heteronormative male.
Yeah,
I'm open to whoever wants to wordsmith that. I'm fine with that. Yeah,
I'm fine with that. Is let's take a vote that maybe we use the language that Kim has added and that Rich has kind of proposed, combine those two together, and move forward with our at-large crew. Recruitment, as that's our goal, as someone who meets those criteria. And we could take a show of hands on yays for moving forward with that as our at-large recruitment.
Yeah, I'll second that motion.
Are there any nays out there? And
the only thing I would clarify is that we're not looking for somebody that can check off all of those boxes, because we may not find somebody with all those boxes. But that, as a recruitment committee, once we had something saying we're looking for those folks, we could help kind of get this message out then to a diverse group of, or the, you know, the organizations within the county that kind of represent those various qualities, not anticipating that we're going to get somebody that clicks off on all of those, but at least outreach to those groups.
Yeah. So is that... Kim, are you good with that now moving forward with starting that at-large recruitment with those kind of things we've identified and wordsmithing those yours and Rich's statement?
Yeah. So we can target recruitment on these things that the council has identified as demographics that would like to be filled, knowing that we might not fill all, but that an effort would be made to fill these things. And then I think in parallel, I'll reach out to Rich and Simone and connect to you with our group that Travis mentioned that's working on our plan for our program to have a DEI addendum to the solid waste management plan, because part of that is the SWAC. And so I think it'd be good to, while we move forward with this recruitment, that we also start working together on fine-tuning this document and incorporating it as well as in our addendum.
That sounds good to me. Thanks for kind of putting a neat little bow on that discussion for us. I'm going to move forward with the agenda and go to public comment, which I didn't see anyone from the public on here, so I'm going to assume we have no public comment. Is there anything for the good of the order that anyone would like to promote or mention groups are involved with, anything like that?
Kyle, I think you did a fabulous job chairing the meeting.
Good job.
Thank you. I didn't know I'd be doing it, but maybe that was the best way to do it.
Yeah.
So does vice chair automatically go up to chair since there's a vacancy now?
Well, I guess that's what we need to determine with Stephen, is if he's resigning completely, or so I think, Travis, you could probably reach out to him and figure that out, and then possibly we'll be recruiting for position.
Yeah, at a minimum, like, he is vacating the chair position. We do know that.
Yeah. So I guess we could, since we're kind of out of time tonight, unfortunately, it's 8:05, so, I mean.
You dodged that one, Kyle.
I'd be more than happy to step up to vice chair, but I had to do it before 8 p.m., so now that the meeting is officially over.
So, but put that in the bylaws.
Kyle, yeah. Section 3C of the bylaws says that you're the chair now.
Yeah, okay. I know.
Yeah. I know, and that's fine. I'd be more than happy to do it. It's not really much, you know, much water to carry, I guess. You know, it's pretty easy to do, so I can run meetings. It's not hard.
We'll get the whole story, Kyle.
Okay.
We will update you, and we will check in with you before the mob has assigned you a task right now. We'll give you a chance to think it over and figure out what the group needs to do. So.
Okay. So, yeah, just to wrap up real quick, we've got the subcommittee now formed with Tim and Joe for the traffic impacts at Central Transfer moving forward. And then we also have the legislative subcommittee is going to get with Travis on developing a kind of plan of action for what we want to see and how we're going to work as a legislative subcommittee. And then Kim and Simone and Rich will continue kind of working on the recruitment subcommittees. And thank you all for showing up. Sorry we went a little over. I appreciate y'all being here.
Thank you very much, Kyle, for stepping up and handling that. And thank you, everybody else, for showing up and being involved.
All right. Have a good night, y'all. Oh, Kim.
Yeah.
Video. I want to see explosions and fireworks.
Let me find.
See who else. Just you and me left. Everyone else is like.
I was about to say something, and I was like, oh, they're all leaving.
They're all leaving. They're just like, get me out of here. I'm going to stick around for it. As a firefighter, I have a special interest in fires and things blowing up. I mean, that's kind of cool. If it's hard, don't worry about it. You could email it to me or something. But.
It's a kind of large file, so I'm not sure if it'll email appropriately. But I have pulled it up. Let me see if I can share my screen. You see the video?
Yep, I got it.
There's no sound.
That's fine. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it was quite the show.
Quite a few fireworks in there, not just like one or two maybe, but at least a couple.
Yeah. That was probably the most, like, I don't know. It was quite a display. You know?
Yeah, I'm glad it doesn't look like the pile really caught much on fire. There's a small fire, but not a huge one, obviously. So maybe something we could say for next year is like a little outreach on proper firework disposals, maybe tag team with the fire marshal's office or something to share that video with people of this is what can happen if we just throw, you know, regular old fireworks into the trash. So dispose of them properly, and they're not recyclable. So
yeah, we have worked with fire marshal in the past, so those ovens are definitely, like, we can totally do that. And Derek gave us permission to use this video for outreach next year.
Perfect. All right, thanks for being here. Have a good night.
You too.
Talk to you later.
Bye.
Bye.